1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And I want to go now to Marion. Good afternoon, Marion.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, Marion, we've been talking about camper vans, and there's a big issue, we know, down in Hook Head in Wexford, with where we're told hundreds of, over 100 camper vans descend there during the good weather over weekends, and it's causing no little upset from locals. What's your take on that?
Well, I saw about 200 or 300 camper vans in Dungarvan a few weekends ago, about 30 on the street in Ardmore, and none of them had facilities. And my big concern was, where are they emptying their toilets and where are they dumping their rubbish? Because one of my friends was saying that in a small cove in County Waterford, a whole load of rubbish was dumped, but I'm just wondering, are they also emptying their toilets, like into rivers or seas, or where do they empty them if they're not on a designated campsite?
Yeah, I'm looking at the New Ross Standard, which is, of course, the local paper down in Wexford. The big story there, camper van chaos at the Hook. And there's talk there that in the aftermath of the June long weekend, we were left with black sacks of rubbish and human excrement along our beautiful stretch of coast. And every week's fresh damage to lovely historical stone walls, because some of the drivers of the camper vans aren't able to handle the size of them on the narrow roads. But your issue was, in particular, you're wondering about those chemical toilets, I think, that they have on board those camper vans.
Yeah. And I know that some friends in England were telling me that in Exeter and Devon, that there's a huge problem with people just emptying the toilets in a quiet space in the countryside or near rivers because they don't have facilities. And like, it's just a question of getting our act together as a community and saying, OK, we can't go abroad. Thousands of people have either hired or bought camper vans. So the county councils need to make more campsites with proper facilities available.
Yeah, because they should. Yeah, there should be some place to empty these toilets and facilities. Yeah.
I mean, I did camping holidays years ago with my kids, but we were in a campsite, so you had all the facilities there, like for your rubbish and for toilets and things like that. And that's the really big issue, that if we're going to allow people to buy camper vans, surely we should supply proper camping facilities where they can use toilets and, you know, empty their waste and pay for it, obviously.
And where were you, Marion, when you saw the huge number of camper vans?
The huge number was in Dungarvan, and they had parked all along the road in a sports ground and at a place called the Lay-By, and really any place where they could pull in, they were just parked. And in one case in Ardmore, a couple of families seemed to be together and they had parked near the beach, took out a camper bed, a camp table, their drinks for the adults, and the kids were jumping up and down the camper bed, and there wasn't room for anybody with a buggy or a wheelchair to get past them on the pavement. And it's a really wide pavement. So it can be, like, everyone would love to think, yeah, you know, the freedom of it is great, but there needs to be proper facilities, proper places where people can go.
Because you do obviously see camper vans setting up, and it does look lovely. Like, it looks like, God, that would be, you know, as you say, the freedom, you can take off, set up anywhere. But you're saying there are downsides to that.
Well, see, the downside is, if you think about it practically, some years ago when travelling communities moved into areas and parked on the side of the road or parked in nice beauty spots, we all complained and there was uproar over it. And now it seems that because they're privately owned, that they think they can do the exact same thing, go where they want, you know, take over the nicest beauty spots and just leave their rubbish behind them and leave the toilets behind them. So there should be proper rules in place.
And of course, Marion, you know as well that not everyone who has a camper van would behave like that and leave rubbish anywhere. You know, but there's a lot of very responsible owners. But I think we might have a responsible camper van owner.
Yeah, if the facilities were there, that's the big thing, that we need to provide the facilities. if a county council supplied camping sites for people with toilet facilities and with waste facilities and charged them for using them, wouldn't that get around the problem?
Yeah, I've been given a statement we've had in from the Hook Lighthouse. They say they are proud to offer award-winning visitor experiences year-round. But it says the area around outside the walls of Hook Lighthouse is a public roadway. This area does not fall under the remit of Hook Lighthouse. Hook Lighthouse, therefore, has no legal authority to manage this area. Hook Lighthouse does, however, recognise that there are a number of campers, caravans and tent campers using this area to set up camp. It is disappointing to see the flora and fauna of this naturally beautiful area of biodiversity damaged. Saying they go on then to say that they do their best to protect the area, but they have to conduct litter picks outside the walls of Hook Lighthouse. But unfortunately, beyond this, there's nothing that can be done by the lighthouse. That's pretty much what you're saying there, Marion.
Yeah. I think that we just need to look at the bylaws and to look at county councils or Gardaí becoming involved and saying, OK, we supply the facilities and charge people for using the facilities and set up bylaws so that they have to use the facilities. Okay. This is no bylaws, as you said, yes, destroying the environment as well. Okay?
Okay, thanks, Marion. I want to bring David Murray. Good afternoon.
Katie, how are you?
Are you one of our responsible camper van?
Oh, I am most certainly. There are certain things I would agree with your last caller, with Marion, things I would disagree with. In relation to emptying toilets and that, motorhomes have their own septic tank, as I'm sure you're aware of, and you will get two or three nights in that without having to empty it, okay? So if I go down to the likes of Hookhead, I would stay maybe one night, two nights. I can bring that home with me and I can empty it into my own septic tank here at home. Same with the grey water, with the wastewater, I can empty it into the shower at home here. So the only thing I leave behind me when I'm in places like that is the tire tracks, nothing else. Bags of rubbish I take home with me. I was down at Hook Lighthouse there the weekend before the bank holiday, and it was absolutely disgraceful what went on down there. There was families with vans with made-up beds in the back. They had fires lighting on the grass beside them. There was caravans, people in tents. I remember passing a comment to somebody thinking, the campers in the tents, they don't have any facilities to use the toilets. Where are they going to? So I made the decision. I certainly wouldn't go down there the weekend again. You know, it was a disgrace what went on there.
You say that if you were away for a few days, you'll run back home, change the grey water, use your own septic tank at home. Do you think everyone does that?
Yes, I would think that motor home owners that are at it for a while, they will do it, yes, because what I could do is I could go and I could stay at Hookhead for 2 days. I could go on in and book into a campsite and I can use their facilities to empty the water, empty my toilet and refill my water, okay, and then stay there a night and then move on somewhere for another night or two. And that's what most motorhome owners do. The problem is now you have people with vans with beds in the back. They have a little pull-out cooker at the side. They are not campers. They are people. I appreciate families are trying to get away, you know, with their kids. They have to get out of the cities, out of the towns, go to the beach. That's what they do. But they need to do it in a more responsible manner, you know.
But when you say they are not campers, I mean, aren't they entitled to use camper vans and go,
But they're not camper vans. They're like a normal Ford Transit van with a couple of beds thrown into the back of it. They're not registered as camper vans. They're commercial vehicles, you know.
Right. But is that just because actually you can't get a camper van for love nor money now?
You can get them, but you have to pay for them. You know, I know not everybody, would be in a position to afford to pay the exorbitant prices that some people are charging for them. But look, that's the way it is. It's with COVID, with the lockdown staycations, that's everybody's chosen now to buy camper vans and buy tents and take up camping.
How long have you been at it?
I'm at it just over 2 years now, you know.
Oh, so you are a COVID camper, really? You took this up?
Oh, no, I've bought it. I have my camper van well over 2 years. It was before COVID kicked in, you know. So I've done a good bit of touring around the country before the first lockdown, you know. And I've parked on the pier. Last weekend, for example, I was up in Carlingford Lock, parked on the pier, no issues whatsoever. Go over into the town, you can have a couple of drinks, have a bit of dinner. I think we left €120 in the village that night. You know, come back, come home the next morning. You know, we're not causing any problems. We're parked up there. You know, I don't even put a bag of rubbish into a bin. If there's a bin beside me, I say, that's for the locals. I won't even use it. I bring my own rubbish home. And that's the way I've always been.
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues people seem to take with camper vans is that they park up in very scenic spots, you know, and use up space that we use for parking cars, but just space for that people would, you know, use for an amenity, as in the view, that they block the view, basically, in some of these places.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've actually asked a couple of people from time to time, look, if you wouldn't mind turning your camper, they would park sideways so they can lie on the bed and look out at the sea, and they're taking up maybe three parking spots that a couple of private cars could get in beside them. That is irresponsible, and I do totally agree with that, you know. If I'm there, I try and park in the corner out of the way, then I'm not obstructing anybody, you know. But campsites, now because everybody, as I say, is taking up the campers, campsites now are full. It could take you 3 weeks maybe to get a spot in a campsite, you know. I was in Greignamana last weekend. They have a fabulous facility down in Greignamana called The Hub. And they have, again, you can empty your toilet, you can refill your water, you can empty your grey water there. It's €10 a night, €4 if you want electricity. And it's an absolute fantastic service. And I have to give credit to the organisers of it down there. It's very well run.
The other issue that was mentioned in this article in the New Ross Standard is that camper van drivers, they cause traffic issues because many of them are not used to driving such a wide vehicle. And they're terrified because a lot of these are rented. They're terrified they're going to scratch them. So they kind of take a position in the middle of the road, which can cause traffic issues. Have you come across that?
Well, Katie, I'm a bus driver myself. I have buses here, so I'm well used to driving big vehicles. But I understand what you're saying. But if you appreciate that buying a new camper van costs in excess of over €100,000, so you are going to be a little bit more careful with it, you know. You're going to watch it going around corners. You're going to watch it coming up against walls or whatever. They're not like an ordinary van. If something happens, you can just go and put a bit of paint on it and it's great. It's fixed up. It doesn't work like that, you know. But just in relation
is that for a brand new one, David?
It would be probably from maybe 6,000 up to maybe €120,000, yeah.
Wow, yeah. So it's a big investment.
Now, needless to say, mine isn't brand new, but it's a few years old, you know.
Yeah.
But just your last caller did say something, and I do agree with her. And if you're parked in a public place, if you're parked, I think she mentioned Dungarvan, there was campers parked and they had their tables and chairs out on the side of the road, the kids were running around. That, I think, is illegal. You know, you're entitled to park in a public place because you're tax insured and you have your CVRT, but you're not entitled to set up camp there. In other words, putting out your table and chairs and your barbecue. You know, you do that when you go into a campsite because you're allocated another slot beside your camper van to put out your awning, put out your windbreaker, your table and chairs and your barbecue. You've paid for that facility and you have it. You're not entitled to do that, you know, in a public place on a main street or parked up by the seafront.
Yeah, but I'm sure a lot of people out there would have seen that.
I've seen it myself. But you don't do it. It's a given rule with people that are responsible motorhome owners. You don't do that. You just don't do that, you know. You have to show respect for the locals and for other people using the area as well.
But is there not the whole idea of wild camping? And, you know, not just with a tent, but with these camper vans as well, that you pull up, you know, not at a public spot as per se,
yeah,
but, you know, somewhere with a nice view and a bit of space. And
And that's the Hookhead. That's what you call wild camping, is that Hookhead.
Yeah.
And there are lots of other places around Duncannon. You can park down around Duncannon there as well. Wexford is a lovely place. There's some beautiful spots there. The problem in Wicklow here, where I'm based, is most of those scenic areas with car parks, they have the overhead barriers, the height restrictions. You can't get into them. Now, I know in Wicklow, they're thinking they're trying to open up like an air facility down on the Murrah. And I certainly hope that goes ahead, because that will be a big boost to the area there.
And what do you mean by an air facility?
An air is where you can park up and you can maybe pay €10 to park up for the night. They have a beautiful one down in Portumna. It's I think it could be run by Waterways Ireland, mm-hmm. and that would hold maybe 25 campers. You can park up, and I think it's a maximum stay of 2 nights. Yeah. You have your parking meter there, you put your money in, you get your ticket out, you display your ticket. You can empty your waste there, and you can refill your water as well. And they also have the toilets and showers there as well. It serves for the marina there as well.
But there is this idea in some quarters that there isn't as much money in camper van tourists as there are maybe in other tourists. But you say you always make a point of spending in the towns you go into.
Oh, I do, yeah. If you're away for a couple of days, Katie, you know, if I'm going out to Hookhead, obviously I'll have enough on board because there's no shops there. So you'll have something for your dinner or for your breakfast. You move on the next day, and if you get to park in, say, the likes of Dungarvan or whatever, for example, you can pull up. You go and you have your lunch then in a coffee shop when we were able to go into them, of course. Later that evening, then, you can go into the local hotel or into the bar and get your food and a couple of drinks and come back and go to bed, you know. So you're leaving money in all these towns, you know. There are very few people that I know of that have motorhomes that would literally go away in a motorhome and have their breakfast, dinner and tea in a motorhome. They don't do it. You know, you have to get out and about and go for a couple of drinks and have your dinner.
And have you ever seen now, when you're out and about with your motorhome over the last couple of years, people doing what Marion was worried about? Emptying toilets in inappropriate places?
No.
Does it happen, do you think?
I'm sure it does. And as I say, they're very irresponsible if they are doing it. There's no reason to be doing it, to be honest with you. You know, even if they're that badly off, all they need to do is buy a second cassette for their toilet and put the full one into their garage, keep it in their garage or in their storage area. There's absolutely no need to do that.
Right, okay. Will you stay with us, David, because we've got...
I've got
Tony on another line. Tony, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing?
You are also a camper vanner?
Yeah, I'm camping over 20 years. The problem at the moment is that an awful lot of people are coming into the camping game and they don't know the etiquette of what you should do and what you shouldn't do, and they're giving everybody a bad name. So, like that lady said about Dungarvan. Dungarvan have a new facility in down there. You can get grey water, you can dump your grey water, you get fresh water, and you have a tidy facilities for dumping your tidies as well. €10 a night. It's a fantastic facility. And if the people here in the councils in the small towns, if they had any sense, they would put in that man said heirs. Heirs are all over Europe. Every small village and town in France has heirs. And it brings in business into the town. So it's money. I mean, camper van people, we all love to go out for ourselves. I mean, instead of the camper van is your facilities for parking. You know, I do an awful lot of wild camping. And I have all the facilities. I can stay away for, like, I'm completely self-efficient as far as solar panels and everything. But you have, people don't realize how much money is in camper vans and camper van business if you get it right. Every small town should have a place. Charge €10 a night. All they need is fresh water, a place to dump the grey water and empty the toilet cassettes, and you have money for jam.
And when you say you do an awful lot of wild camping, where do you camp?
I've camped all over Europe. I mean, I started down as Croatia, Austria, Slovenia, Czech Republic, I've done the lot. And you have Spain, Portugal, and every small place in Portugal, they've also got facilities for camper vans. Because, I mean, they realise that it's big business. And they realise that camper van people like to go out in the evening, they have a meal, they have a few drinks. We don't have to drive home. We're home.
And do you get a good welcome when you, I mean, bring it back home and when you're camping around Ireland?
Fantastic. There's not a problem in the wide out of the world. You have, the biggest problem is July and August. July and August is a nightmare because the thing about it there is you have everybody out. I mean, you have people with caravans that will just pull up. They'll do the same thing. And they don't have the facilities. I mean, we're fully kitted out that we can carry our wastewater, we can carry our fresh water, and I carry two cassettes. So I could park for a week without going anywhere. So you have, if you're set up properly for it, it's very well done.
Okay. Will you stay there, Noel? I want to bring Tony. I want to bring Noel in. Noel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you've had a motorhome for about 15 years.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah, I've had one for a long, long time. And what triggered me to call you was the bit about Hookhead, for instance. Last week we were down there, and we turned around and left. And again, it's like a blame game all the time to people. The councils have done nothing down there. The gates into the lighthouse area is they have two wardens on it that you can't go in, and the facilities are not there for people who camp, and most motorhome people who are experienced wouldn't stay there, as we didn't. We just turned and left because it's in a mess. The place is a mess anyway. But and I don't want to blame the council, but it is their responsibility, and that's where the problem lies, I think, in Ireland. And as your previous caller there was speaking, I too travel Europe. I've done over 150,000 kilometres in Europe, and the facilities are everywhere, and you're welcomed everywhere. And that, again, is a problem here in Ireland this year and last year with this COVID. You have possibly 8,000 to 10,000 more motorhomes that would be out of the country at this time of the year, travelling, and then home. So it definitely will increase.
But you're not suggesting, Noel, though. Noel, are you suggesting that the vans, you're saying there's people stopping you going into the car park in at Hook Lighthouse. But you're not... Are you suggesting you should be let in?
Well, I don't think it can accommodate motorhomes, to be quite honest, the cars that I go in. I'm not too sure where they were charging, but the area is very small outside it. For anybody who knows it, it really is small, and it's not flat. It's actually, you're probably anybody parking or doing any camping overnight down there in any respect would be doing environmental damage, and I think that needs to be addressed. But to anyone to suggest that anyone in a motorhome is causing these problems, I have never in my life seen a motorhome person disrespect an area they camp in. I've never seen them dump their grey water, let alone their sewage, which I find, I think that's something else. And in most motorhomes today, the facilities are quite good. And as your previous caller said too, we are self-sufficient in ours as well.
So and, who's leaving the mess, Noel?
Well, now there you go. to accuse one group of people who, I can tell you, they would point out to any home user if they left something behind very quickly, I can assure you. And it just doesn't seem to happen. I've never encountered it, nor my encounters any of that.
But it was David, I think it was David was making the point that there is a sort of... a lot of people in motorhomes now that wouldn't have been doing it pre-COVID, that there's kind of people outside of what would have been seen as the community of campervan users, that's grown now, and there's people involved and taking out these campervans that would never have done it before.
Yes, but you see, if they're using a motorhome or a campervan, whichever you like to call it, they are all fully equipped. And I think one of your earlier callers made a good point in relation to people who are quite entitled to do what you do is use their commercial vehicle, and throw the stuff into it and go camping. And, you know, they're entitled to that. So, and as is the same with a motorhome user, who I've always found have respected anywhere, towns and villages, but they're entitled to park. They pay more tax, VRT, VAT, and they pay insurance and everything for this. So, I mean, it's not a vehicle. If it's a vehicle, it's not roadworthy, or it won't be parked. Okay. So they have an entitlement to it as well, like, you know, but respectfully, of course.
Okay, Noel, we're having a bit of trouble with your line there. We might try and sort that out. I'm going to bring in Colin. Colin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you're familiar with Hookhead as well.
I am, yes, and I believe it's a bit of a disaster at the moment. But I think Hookhead is only a symptom of a bigger issue. Some of the underlying facts in the situation is that there's over 14,000 motorhomes registered and taxed on the roads of Ireland at the moment.
And is that a lot more than would have been the case a few years ago?
Yeah, the last time we looked at the figures there a few years ago, it was 11,000.
All right.
But the one of the main issues is that within the caravan and camping parks of Ireland, there's only about 2,500 touring pitches. Now, I'm here now in Corrichase at the moment, and we have people with tents, we have people with caravans. And all they have to be accommodated within that 2,500 touring pitches. And add to that, the 14,000 motorhomes, and they have nowhere to go. So that's one side of it.
Yeah, there's a big mismatch there for sure.
A huge mismatch. Now, the other side of it then, too, is if you're in France, there is about 7,500 what they call motorhome parking areas. We have a handful here in Ireland. And the majority of them in France are provided by the local councils. They're between free and about €12 a night to stand on, to stay on, depending on whether you're in a high-demand tourist area or some local village.
So would you agree then with what Noel was saying there, that this, that in particular looking at the Hook Head issue, that there is an issue there for the county council?
There is an issue for the county council. Like the county councils of Ireland, now some have stepped up and are stepping up. I mean, the Cork County Council have an excellent 30-bay motorhome parking facility in Cove. And they also have a smaller one down in Castletown Bear. Waterford County Council have an excellent, I think it's 9-bay one after putting in Dungarvan. But that's about it for the 26 counties. You know, you just got to find some place to park up, like the Hook, like Carnso Point, like wherever that you can find.
Yeah, I'm just looking, sorry, just to say at the end of the statement from the Hook Lighthouse, it's saying that within 17 kilometres, that's 17.17 kilometres of Hook Lighthouse, there are four excellent caravan and camping sites, including Norman View Campsite in Ocean Island and Feathered on Sea, Roach's Campsite in Clun Mines, and Wallace's Campsite in Duncannon.
Yeah. Now, okay, I'm familiar with Norman View. Norman View is not a caravan and camping site. It's a motorhome parking area, motorhome parking. You pay €10 a night. You have a place to park your motorhome on private land. There are no facilities provided. There's no toilet box, shower block, kids' playgrounds, restaurants, nothing. Now, that's a tenner a night. And that's exactly the type of product which the majority of motorhome users are looking for. The others are formal caravan and camping parks like Curra Chase, where I'm here. I'm paying €30 a night here. I have two grandchildren with me, and that's okay. It's a different product. But there seems to be a blind spot among the authorities in Ireland to understand that there are two distinctly separate products required to service the total market. You have what we would call a formal caravan and camping park with all the facilities, playgrounds for children, absolutely five-star, and that's brilliant. And you pay maybe, depending on how many kids you have, between maybe €30 and €50 a night. The other product, which is sadly lacking, is what we call motorhome parking areas, of which there are nearly 20,000 throughout Europe itself, 7,500 in France, where you can pull up and you can park for 24 at a rate of either free to about €12 for 24 hours. Like, if you were down in Biarritz now in France, it would cost you maybe €12 for 24 hours parking.
And why do you need those? I mean, if you can park anywhere.
Well, you see, parking anywhere is grand up to a point. But, you know, the parking of motorhomes needs to be regulated properly. For example, in the place in Cove, it's regulated. You're not allowed to put out tables and chairs. You're not allowed to put out awnings. You're not allowed to run generators. It's a parking place. You know, if you want to do all those other activities, you go into a caravan and camping park and you get a camping pitch.
But and the difficulty is, of course, that as you said there isn't enough of those pitches.
There is not.
So is that why, you know, if you pull up to many beaches, people will be very familiar with this site.
Yeah.
Bits of green areas around beaches, nice scenic spots. You'll very often see two or three or four, maybe 10 of these camper vans and the lovely setups. It looks lovely. The awning is out. The camping table is out. The bottles of wine are out.
Yeah. Well, you see, the problem of putting out the tables and chairs and all that kind of stuff, that's actually a prosecutable offence under the Litter Pollution Act. If I park my camper van in a public parking area, and like a car park somewhere, and if I put up tables and chairs in an awning, I can get prosecuted under the Litter Pollution Act for putting out that paraphernalia.
And does that is that enforced?
No.
Well.
And that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
If you go down to the Hook Head now, you could probably find multiple offences under the Litter Pollution Act. But it's not policed. And there's people there who don't know what they're doing. They're doing stuff in all innocence. And they're just not aware of the protocols, what you should and what you should and what you can't do, you know?
Okay. Let me bring in James Couser. James, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, what's your point, James?
Basically, the point, like, I'm one of the admins of a large group on Facebook called Irish Motorhome Group, and basically, with all the, like, I understand people's frustrations, the local people, say in Ardmore, for example, because I've seen pictures of, say, parking and stuff like that, and people complaining, the locals complaining about things like that. I can totally understand where people are coming from. The likes of Dixfield down there is a fabulous, it's an asset to their community, actually. We as motorhomers, we frequent Dixfield.
Where's Dixfield?
It's in Ardmore itself as well. Like, it's in Ardmore, County Waterford. It's a beautiful place. It's actually very popular. A lot of us love it. Like, it's somewhere safe to park. It's like an air, and you pay for the fee for the night. You park in safe. And now this is the point I'm making. Obviously, I think it's being made this year, especially this year with the staycation. Because a lot of people have invested in motorhomes because they can't go abroad with their families, or they've rented. So, you know, that's why every town you go to, or every spot that you maybe would have went to 2 years ago, it's very difficult to get a spot. And majority of campsites now are booked out. Like, you see it all the time on our page. Like, someone that owns a campsite might say, fully booked up till September. Now, that's a great thing. It's actually excellent to see that they're doing well, and I'm delighted for it to hear that. But you see, this is the problem where people have, they still need to go away in their motorhomes, and they want to, and they pick beautiful places like Ardmore. You've got all around Kerry, you've got Donegal, like Dunfanaghy. Recently, actually, in Dunfanaghy, there was a high barrier erected, and there was actually like a meeting happened recently where one of my fellow admins attended the meeting, and it was in relation to same thing, motorhome parking. So it's a national issue. It seems to be happening everywhere around the country at the moment. Now, I believe if the local councils, for example, like we have places like Cove, which is fabulous. It's brilliant the way it's set up. You pay the money, you go in, you have a safe night parking there, and the local county council benefits from that. And then in that, then they obviously put it back into their local areas in Cork, for example. You have Port Dumna in County Galway. Again,
that was mentioned already, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a fabulous... I think if county councils and local councillors looked at the air system of decent ones like Cove that are already there and Port Dumna, they could actually benefit their whole county council area, like back in money going back into the economies to reinvest and look at, and that way you wouldn't have the issue of people needing to get somewhere on a holiday and parking up where they can find a spot.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And that'd be my point. We're actually spotless. Everyone, I've never met anyone who has ever even dreamt of emptying a cassette or anything like it, because it's the ethos of it. It's common sense. You don't do like anything like that, and you have to respect the local area and respect people.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, James. I think a lot of people will be very glad to hear that, particularly in relation to those toilet cassettes.
Yes.
Will you stay with us? I want to take a break, but I want
yes,
to stay with this.
Yes, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Siobhan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You live near Hookhead.
Yes, I do. And I'm in ringing connection with what goes on down there. Like your previous callers have spoken about, you know, visiting Hookhead and leaving. But one of the big issues down there is people are living there long term. They have no toilet facilities. They have no washing facilities. They are using the rock. They are using the beaches. Families are coming along at the weekend and their kids are playing in the same areas.
So you're saying they're using the rock and the beaches as a toilet?
Yeah. And people are coming along with their families then at the weekend to visit, and the kids are walking in the same areas. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, something has to be done about this.
Is this a recent development,
no,
Siobhan?
No. It's going on several years now. It's going on many years. And not all people, you know, but some people arrive for the summer, and that's it, and they spend the whole summer there.
Yeah, and winter. And I'm just surprised that, there would be people there for that length of time.
I don't know the individual circumstances of why these people come, whether they like wild camping or whether, like, the scenery is beautiful. It is beautiful down there. But like last week, there was many units of the fire brigade there because a camper van went on fire.
Oh. And was there a lot of camper, like this was in a scenario where there was lots of camper vans around?
Well, it's not a question of that there's so many around. It's just, it is a very, very small area. And you know, by the nature of it, like, they're all parked very close together. But, like, you know, on a Saturday night, you could have bonfires the whole way along the hook, you know.
Like, how many camper vans are we talking about here?
Well, you could be talking about maybe 30, 40.
I mean, it strikes me that I know that, you know, people who go down to caravan parks every summer, they have a mobile home maybe parked in a caravan park. And there's that's a whole community. They go down, their kids are friends with the other caravan mobile homeowners' kids. And that's a whole community for the summer. And I wonder, is there something else going on with this wild camping now?
I don't know. Like, you know, there's every age. There's every age and, you know, every nationality. Like, you couldn't actually put on one demographic, you know. It's just something that seems to appeal to people. And I have no problem with it. Nobody has any problem with it. The big issue is there is no facility.
And is this close to, you know, where you live, where your actual house is? Or,
yes, it is, yeah.
Can you actually see the bonfires and the camp?
Yes. Everybody, it's a peninsula. Everybody can see the bonfires at the weekend.
Right.
And there's actually webcams from the Hook Lighthouse, so anybody can actually log on and look at this.
And would they ever come and maybe ask for facilities from the householders in the area?
No, because the householders will be back off the hook itself, you know.
Right. And would there be much interaction between householders and the people in these camps?
No, because people who would normally go down to the camps and that would be, you know, sitting around the campfires with their own, you know, their own group of friends or family or whatever, you know, or friends, you know. It'd be like any community, really.
Siobhan,
sorry, go ahead.
And what do they do during the day then? Are they just out swimming and...
I don't know, to be honest. I was looking at the water, maybe, or I was sitting in the sun or sleeping. I don't know. I don't actually knock at the door to see them. But like everybody, there's a beautiful walk around to a cat. It goes right around by the lighthouse. It goes the whole way down to Slade Harbour and back up again. And you know, you have to walk by these camper vans all the time to get down there. But apart from anything else, there was an accident down there a couple of weeks ago between a camper van and a car. And the road was blocked for an hour. That had been the day when the other camper van went on fire. Like, the emergency service couldn't even get down there.
Oh, yeah, you can see how that could become a serious issue.
Yeah.
And was there an issue with the fire brigade getting down to the fire?
No, there wasn't. No, because it was in the evening. But you know, if it had been at a weekend when there was a lot more people down there. Now, in fairness to the guards, they've been fantastic. They have been actually trying to curtail local access only when the numbers get very high. But this is very hard to police. You know, if all these vans are living down there for a number of weeks, like, it's not as if they're travelling up and down the road, so they can't be stopped. Like, they're already there.
And has there been any kind of confrontation or aggro in relation to locals with these people moving in?
No. Well, no, I can only speak for myself personally. I've had no confrontation with any of the people.
And is there signage up saying, you know, what is permitted?
The signage is another aspect altogether. There's a huge amount of blowholes down there, and they're not actually cordoned off. And for people that don't know the area or walking there at night, if they were to go down the blowholes, they would die, and that would be it. Like, it's a very dangerous area. It's not. You know, the reason the lighthouse is there because there's something like 400 wrecks between there and Brownstown Head, you know? Like, it is very wild down there.
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely beautiful. You can see what draws people down there.
It is beautiful. Oh, of course you can. Like, it is beautiful. But I think the real issue is just some kind of I don't know, regulation, maybe put up a few big boulders, limit the number of people that can, you know, park up on the grass, you know. Yes. You know, provide toilets, provide washing facilities. Like, as I said, we are in the middle of a pandemic. Like, it's just, the mind boggles to think that this can go on.
And littering, is that an issue then?
Well, you know, the lighthouse is very good that they do litter, but you go down to the local beach and there's litter all over it. But having said that, you don't know whether it comes in from the sea. A lot of stuff is washed in from the sea as well.
And would, I mean, are these people spending money in the area then, as tourists?
Well, the nearest town is 10 kilometres away. So, like, I don't know whether they would go in there to get supplies or what they would buy in there. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I suppose in fairness, they have to eat.
They are
getting supplies somewhere. Yeah, Siobhan, yeah. Thank you for that. Stay with me. I want to bring in Sean McGarry. Sean, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Katie. How are you doing?
You're over there from lovely Westport.
Yeah, that's right. My wife and I, Katie, have a camper van this 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And prior to that, we had various caravans when the kids were younger. But speaking on two aspects of the programme, one is the litter side of it, and the other is the money side of it. Last year, for example, we were in Ballyvaughan for a night. And
this is in the Burn, North Clare.
That's right, yeah. And a car arrived up with four youths in it and full of beer and a tent. And they got out and they partied for the night. They drank all the beer. They got up the following morning. They dumped the tent there beside the beach. And they dumped all their beer cans and everything else. And they drove away and they left that situation behind them. Now, that litter was caused by those people. Whereas we were there overnight, very obvious, with our camper van. And we drove off the following day and left our area spotless. So there's an example of litter that was caused by other people that stayed overnight.
That you think you might be blamed for that?
Oh, absolutely. I would think so. Those young people didn't care about the environment like that they were staying in that night. We like to go back to the area again the following year. So that's why we leave it really clean and tidy for the next people that's coming after us. And on the spending side of it, we were in Balmullet a month ago. And on the return trip home on the Sunday evening, we did our week's shopping in Balmullet. So we spent actually €100. Last year, we were in Achill. Our extended family joined us, and we ate out in a restaurant, and we spent €200 in the restaurant. So we're always spending. If you bring people,
and are you conscious of that, Sean, when you're in an area like that?
Oh, I would be conscious, yeah. Yeah, but you don't live in the camper van, you know, 24/7. You have to get out, meet the locals, see the area that you're in. And as well as that, you make a decision whether you're going to come back there again or not. So you're not really living in the camper van. You're reading a book and you're relaxing. But you will go out to eat, and you might eat during the day. You might eat that evening or whatever. So it's.
And have you ever seen a situation like the one Siobhan was describing that's happening down her way in Hookedna?
No, because where we go camping, it's not very populated, you know. There are wild areas that a lot of people wouldn't go to. So we stay off the beaten track, you know.
And is it legal what you're doing? Because we heard earlier that in certain circumstances, if you pull out the awning and pull out your table and chairs and set up camp like that, that it's not strictly legal.
Well, to be honest with you, wild camping, say, if you get an isolated beach in that and a fine summer's day, we definitely would pull out the table and chairs and sit outside and have our breakfast even in the morning. But like, you see people doing that in cars, and they take stuff out of the boot of their car, open out the table, take out the seat and sit down, read a book and eat outside.
So what's the difference?
Never knew it was illegal, Katie, to be honest with you.
Nobody has ever challenged you anyway, Sean.
No, and I find the people great. People around Ireland, not a bother. I wouldn't have any issue with most of them.
And do you get a good welcome when you pull in to a new town or a new place?
Don't seem to have a problem with people, no. As well as that, it's about your approach, you know, not to be arrogant. And if you are wild camping and you have a doubt about where you're staying, you always ask the local farmer, ask him, is it okay to stay there? Or is there an issue or anything like that? And most of the time, strike up a conversation with them, and a lot of them are glad to see you because they're in isolated areas, and, you know, the talk starts and it goes on from there.
Lovely. William, thanks for that, Sean.
Thanks, Katie.
William, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Katie? Yeah, just listening to Sean there, I think Sean's of old school, to be honest, the same as myself. I've grown up with from a child going in the countryside fishing and all that kind of stuff. And as I got older, when I got married and the family came along, we'd done a lot of camping around the country. And in the olden times, you know, going back to the olden times, you stayed in places and, you know, you tidied up after yourself and you took it away with you. And there wasn't a lot of facilities available then. So, you know, you might actually have to go to the local pub for to go to the toilet in some of the places that we stayed. But what I've noticed in the last, is more COVID-related, I suppose, is the amount of people who are now on the roads with caravans and campers. Now, I've moved over to cruising on the Shannon and the Erin waterways now, and I've noticed in the last year or two that you're now seeing bags of rubbish floating in the water, which again is most likely people who have come to the boating side of it now, like the camping side or the caravanning side, and it's basically, you know, now we're not going to carry this around with us all day, so we'll throw it overboard and let it float down the river.
Like household rubbish?
Yeah, there'd be bags of household rubbish. So, like, what would be in it would be, you know, if they were cooking, there'd be the packaging and stuff like that, and tins and cans, and, you know, so there'd be a bag of rubbish maybe floating by somewhere or stuck in the rushes along the waterway. And the general respect that people have now, compared, listen, as I said, listening to Sean would have the same sort of attitude that I would have if you're in doubt about someone. You know, you might ask, you go and ask someone, is it okay to stay here? You know, is there a problem? And it might only be yourself, and maybe there might even be another couple or someone staying there. But that would be old school, where you were sort of taught to respect what's around you. And I think at the moment now, we don't have that respect from other people coming into it. They're just looking for a way out. It's understandable with the COVID, everyone's looking for a way out just to chill. But I don't think people really, you know, consider where they are, they're going back home, and they're not really bothered about the locals or what's about.
Hard to believe, though, that people aren't, you know, don't understand how to behave in these scenarios.
No, it's again, even from a behavioural point of view, one of your callers was saying there about, you know, asking a camper van, could they move their camper van and put it in a different position because they're taking up three spaces? You know, and I think that's quite obvious to anybody. Like, well, I'm taking up three spaces. There could be someone else coming along now. You know, maybe I should park this way, and that would leave more space for everybody. But it's more of an attitude that, you know, I'm going to do what I want to do, and it's to hell with everyone else. You know, even on the waterways, there's rules for how you sail your boats. You know, and when you come into places and when you pass a boat or when you pass a jetty, you know, so you're supposed to go slowly, you know, not create any wakes. So as you don't, someone could be making a hot cup of tea in the galley and you go by in a speedboat and you churn up the water. Next minute, the tea is spilt over them or a coffee is spilt over them, and they're scalded. Mm-hmm. And now you have a medical emergency. But the people who are doing the camping and the boating and all that for a long time, they have an understanding and they respect, you know, other people.
But the new people don't.
It seems to be that we have people who have come into all these outdoor activities now, and they don't consider anyone else. It's just about their time, their moment on that particular day or week or whatever it is.
Okay. We'll leave that one there. William, thanks for that. 1850-715-815 is their number.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Now, talking there before the break about all the people who have taken to the great outdoors because of COVID and being forced to staycation, another activity that has become huge during COVID is cycling. Pat, good afternoon to you.
Katie, how are you?
Now, your cycling predates COVID.
I'm cycling quite a while, yeah. I cycle for leisure and exercise.
But there's a lot more cyclists out and about now, I think you'd agree.
There are, yeah, but unfortunately, 3 weeks ago, I was cycling on the canal, the Rye Canal, and it wasn't anything to do with another cyclist, but a dog, not on the lead, ran across my path, and I was thrown from my bike. And just to make a long story short, my shoulder was sore, but I found out on Tuesday that the damage is so severe that keyhole surgery would normally be the repair,
mm-hmm.
but he has to open the shoulder, such as the damage done. So, just I would urge people to be.
So, take us back to it and just explain what happened, Pat. You were cycling along very fast, or?
No, I wouldn't have been, no. As I said, I was on the canal, and a gentleman with two dogs, and the dog wasn't on the lead. And I was slow at the time. I was travelling slowly at the time. I had seen the dogs all right, but I wasn't to know that the dog at the last moment would have chose to cross my path, and I had to take evasive action, and it resulted in me falling from the bicycle.
And did you go out over the handlebars?
I really don't know. All I know is that I came down on my shoulder, on my right shoulder.
And what happened? I mean, were you able to get up and cycle away?
I was, yeah, I was. And by the way, now I would take every precaution. I wear the colours, and I wear a helmet, so I would be very cautious cyclist. I travel on my own mostly. Some might say that no one will go with me anyway, but I would choose to travel on my own because I don't like to engage in conversation. I don't consider
because
that.
Because you
safe
like to concentrate.
I don't consider that safe practice. That's right, and I would have concern for other cyclists, and if I was on the main road, certainly for road users. So I'd take every precaution. So I was torn from the bike, I fell on my shoulder, I got up. I did try to cycle, but I had to concede that in a short time.
You couldn't manage.
No, I couldn't.
And what about
no.
the man with the dogs?
He spoke to me and he apologised. He apologised for not having the dog on the lead. And,
that wasn't much good to you at that stage, Pat.
That wasn't, and I actually said that. I said that to him, but he did apologise a couple of times. And anyway, such as that story. But look, all I could say is that people should be careful. As I said, I consider myself a very safe cyclist, and I was caught.
Yeah, and I know there's a bit of a row brewing with the cycle lanes. I think I mentioned it earlier when I was talking to Ronan. A lot of new cycle lanes, which are a fantastic amenity, particularly for families, for weekends, if you want to take, you know, kids out with you. But then you have this other type of cyclist, which is, it was mentioned that they often wear the full Lycra gear.
Oh, I want to be Sean Kelly.
Yeah. And that these two that's not a very good fit on these cycle lanes where you have, you know, people taking their time and family groups and all of that, and it's causing some tension, I think. Have you come across that?
I certainly have, Katie. In fact, in the very recent past in Drumcondra, there's a cycle lane and it's on the road, and I have seen in the recent past one cyclist in the cycle track and the other cyclist talking, cycling abreast and on the path of a car. Now, that's inconsiderate and it's unsafe.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the idea of the... You just wonder what they're doing on the cycle lanes if they want to go at that kind of speed.
Absolutely. And one other... I remember it one morning as well. It's a few years ago now. I was down in towards Sutton. And again... Two cyclists cycling abreast and deep in conversation, and one of them, there was only room for one on the cycle track, so there was no way that I could overtake because it would have certainly been unsafe. But behind me was a learner driver. It could have been doing the test or on a lesson, but I had to draw the attention of the two gentlemen in front of me to be considerate of the person behind in the learner car. Thankfully, I didn't get abused, but they did accept me to, calling their attention. But that shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose the word is really everyone has to be more aware and considerate of everyone else on the road, whether you're walking, whether you're walking your dogs, whether you're on a bike, whether you're in a car.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and where cyclists are concerned, I would suggest strongly choose a safe option. You know, wear the helmet, wear the colours, and stay on the track.
Okay, good advice, Pat. Good advice. Many thanks for that. And listen, best of luck with that surgery.
Okay.
And
thanks,
get you back on your bike as soon as possible.
Thanks, Katie.
Take care. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
René Mize, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are we?
Good. And you are down there in Wexford, the Schnitzel House restaurant.
Correct, on North Main Street there, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people know it, of course.
You
had an issue. Well, you've got a whole setup there now. I'm looking at a photograph of of your restaurant here in front of me. And you have a big outdoor space there now outside the restaurant.
Correct, yeah.
And you got, obviously you had to get approval from the council for that.
That's right, yeah. So I had applied for a, what's called a 254 license, section 254 license, with the Wexford County Council. I had applied for that on the 31st of May. And I needed to do that in order to get my grant for the outdoor furniture, which was a requirement from the County Council, which I had then been approved, the grant.
And how much was the grant worth to you?
The grant is basically, it was a maximum of €4,000, okay? So it didn't matter whether you spent €20,000 or €50,000, you know, the maximum grant was €4,000 per premises. So if you own more premises, like ourselves, the Waffle House, we got €4,000 for each premises in order to make it for outdoor dining friendly, you know?
Okay, and how much did you spend altogether?
Altogether, between the two premises, we spent close to €20,000.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So that was between windbreakers, new furniture, patio heaters that we needed to put in place, you know, in order to keep people warm, because we are right at the front of the sea, so you know the fair breeze here at the odd time, you know.
Yeah. Well, I must say it looks positively continental, René. So it's a lovely job. It looks lovely.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's what we're trying to achieve, you know. And this was always a dead part of the town, especially that premises. And I always liked the premises. I've actually worked in that premises when I was younger, and you know, I just walked in one day, and you know, I leased it basically, you know, for a 10-year lease back in December, because you know the Schnitzel House and the Crescent Quay. And this is all due to COVID, because we needed more space so that we could social distance our customers. We just didn't have the chance down on our Crescent Quay location. It was too small for that. So we took on a 10-year lease, and it took off positively, you know, well, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the problem?
So the problem is I got a phone call from the county council official, and who basically asked me to remove my furniture off the main street. And I asked him, why was there an issue, or was there something raised by, you know, people walking by or such? And no, but they can't allow me to have that many tables and chairs out on the main street. And I said, but there's plenty of other, you know, there's plenty of other premises who have done it. There's plenty of other streets that have been completely closed off, okay? I'm very mindful of keeping enough space for wheelchair access, you know.
And just to explain to people, that's a pedestrianised street.
It's pedestrianised. Now, I actually got a letter in the post just as we opened up from the County Council to say that this part of the main street will now be officially closed from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. each day, 7 days a week, in order to help, you know, obviously hospitality and all that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, but when you were applying for your grant and applying for a permission to put these outdoor tables out, or, you know, this outdoor space together, did you not have to, did they not ask you, you know, how far out were you going to go?
No, there wasn't a question asked about that. It was just asked basically, look, how many tables would you like to put out? And I put an application in for, I think it was 12 tables altogether.
And how many tables have you out?
Right now, I'm actually looking at it here now. Right now, I have 2, 4, 6, 7 out on the main street.
Right. So what have they told you? Have they told you remove them or else?
I'm not going to move them in. And the county council official then said, look, I'm going to have to come down to you then. Can we arrange a meeting? And I said, absolutely, no problem. So we had agreed to, I think it was 10 or 11 a.m. last Friday. And he came out and he said, we can't have this road table, you can only stay underneath the roof, but which is privately owned from the group here, from the hotel group that I've actually leased the premises off. So I asked them, so what was the point getting a 254 license, you know, if I'm not going to be granted this, you know? And I said, there's obviously something else, someone else is not happy with what I'm doing, you know. I said, I'm employing 33 plus staff at the moment. We started off very small on the Crescent Quay, it took off. And I said, someone clearly has an issue with what I'm doing, you know.
And do you know, has there been a complaint?
There hasn't been one complaint made, because we had asked the county council official, has there been any complaints made from pedestrians not able to walk by? And his answer was no. And so I asked him what the issue was. And he said, it's just because the busy pedestrianised area, we can't allow people to put furniture out this far, you know. And I said, I took videos, I took photographs of people walking by. There was never an issue. Not one pedestrian came into our premises and said, listen, we have an issue trying to get by you. There was never a problem, you know.
And I'm sure,
in
Rene,
fact,
in fact,
we have customers coming in saying how well it looks, how well it's done, you know, with social distancing. Shop owners have approached me from this part of Main Street saying how well, you know, the area is now. You know, there's a bit of life here now, you know, because this used to be, you know, kind of dead, you know, and they're loving it, you know.
I'm sure, given the week that's in it as well, Rene, when you had hoped to be getting the good news about going ahead with the reopening next week.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Ireland being the only country in Europe still, you know, with outdoor dining, it's very tough on, and I feel for every restaurant and publican, you know, the same, you know, especially the ones that don't have the facility to put tables or chairs outside, you know. We were all hoping for the good news that we could open on the Monday, you know. I mean, you can go as far as the north and you can sit inside, you can do whichever, you know. And it's just very frustrating for all of us to keep getting the bad news and, you know, and on such a short notice as well, you know. And like I said to the county council official, I would have no problem removing a row of tables there, you know, once my indoor dining resumes, you know. But if I was to do that now, I would have to let half my staff go, you know. It's as simple as that, you know, and they would all be either on the PUP payment or on social welfare, whichever, I don't know, you know.
And what are they saying to you? I mean, have they stepped away from it now? Where does it stand?
I haven't heard anything back from them. They had asked me to do a draft on you know, how I want to present the tables. I said, you're standing in front of them right now. I mean, you know, you can see the way we're having it. It's just to keep trying to put things in my way, you know, to make it harder for me. So I sent them a draft now to show the way we want the tables out there. And I haven't heard anything since, you know, and we're just sort of left in the dark now, you know.
And have you been talking to some of your fellow business owners around Wexford? Have they had similar issues with the council, with their outdoor setups?
To be honest, I haven't, but if I only go 20 yards up the road here to my left, there's a street completely closed off, okay, which left only a small footpath in order for one buggy to go through, if that's what the problem it may be, or a wheelchair, you know. And if I go another 100 yards up the road, there's another premises there on the main street with a similar fashion to the way I have it. And, you know, they're operating for quite a while now, you know. So it seems like I'm nearly being picked on, you know.
And you can't think of any reason why?
Absolutely not. Zero reasons. We're doing everything by the book. We have done everything to do with social distancing, especially in these times, you know. Outdoor dining, you know, it's not our priority, what we want. And it's very hard to juggle it, especially with the weather that we're having, you know. But I don't know why I've been particularly picked on. It's to do with other things. My waffle house, you know, there's always constantly something there as well, you know. There's an issue with this, an issue with that, you know. It's just constant, you know.
And I'm looking at the tables that are actually out on the street part, that are,
yeah,
on the public street part, there's nothing over those. So are they, can you use those if the weather turns on you?
I can't actually use those once the weather turns on me, no. So if we have a bad day, that means we're going to be, you know, we're going to lose the, like I said, the 7 tables, you know, that we have out there at the moment, you know.
I heard another restaurateur saying that they're doing their business by weather app at the moment.
Yeah, that's literally what we're doing. You know, I'm already looking at Saturday and it's not looking good, you know. And you see, it's very hard to take bookings in then. You know, if you have bookings, you know, everyone expects to sit underneath the roof or whichever, you know. But it's very, very frustrating at the moment, you know. Especially when, especially my premises, you know, it's over 2 floors. The ceiling height is probably 20 metres. And from top to bottom, you know, and we could social distance easy inside the premises, you know, if we were allowed to reopen, you know.
Yeah, that's a big if, unfortunately, moment, Rennie.
Yeah.
Rennie, listen, good luck with it. Keep us posted, will you, what happens in relation to that stalemate that you are currently find yourself in with the council there. But best of luck.
It's just very frustrating, you know, because, I mean, we were told from day one, you know, the county council will do anything for anyone, especially in the hospitality industry, to help us along the way, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and my staff are obviously on edge now because they know what's going on. They could see it in the paper, you know, they see that we're getting hassled from the county council, so they're all on edge, you know, are they going to lose their job or not, you know. So,
yeah.
No, and we have young staff here as well, you know, who will really appreciate working here, you know.
Yeah. Okay, as we say, best of luck with this. Keep us posted, Rennie. We'll take our break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Patricia, good afternoon to you.
Heya, good afternoon.
Yeah, you have a communion coming up, or you thought you had.
Well, no, my granddaughter was to make her communion on the 17th of July. Now, like many, many hundreds of children in the country, their communions were cancelled from last year. These should have taken place last year. But because of the pandemic, which I understand fully, because I would actually be a frontline worker who has worked throughout this pandemic in a hospital. But they were given a new date, which was the 17th of July, which was fine, you know. And now, because of an off-the-cuff comment by Leo Varadkar, these communions have been cancelled. And yes, Tony Houlihan has stated this morning he did not give any recommendations for communions or confirmations to be cancelled. Now, to me, it's a blatant cover-up by this government to stop these communions and confirmations going ahead, all because of one ridiculous comment made by Leo Varadkar.
I'll just say what the Taoiseach has said. He said that Tony Houlihan, this is what he said today now, that the Chief Medical Officer Tony Houlihan did not recommend cancelling confirmations because they were not supposed to be happening anyway, so there was no advice being asked for or given on that basis.
No, they're backtracking now there again. Like, you know, I mean, they're just covering up everything for themselves because there was nothing on the website, on the government website, about cancelling confirmations or communions. There was absolutely nothing when they cancelled the restaurants from opening up again, indoor dining and the pub. There was absolutely nothing put on those websites about cancelling those communions. Now, why would they have been given a date, the 17th of July? Now, in the particular school that my grandchild is in, the teachers and the clergy have done a brilliant job. They had, on the 17th of July, what was to happen was there was a few communions take place at 10, then more at 12, then more at 2, and more at 4. And that's all the parents want.
Was there going to be? We're almost out of time, but very quickly, yeah. Patricia, were you going to have a party?
No, how could you have a party? She had a room booked, but that couldn't happen because of the indoor pubs. There's no dining allowed, or there's no pubs allowed open. So that would have been cancelled. Like, that's not. It's not about having a party after. It's about these children being allowed. I mean, they're allowing weddings. Like, what sense does that make? They are allowing weddings to take place with extra guests, and they will not allow these little children to receive the sacraments, which is disgrace.
Patricia, I'm over time. I'm going to have to leave that there. We may come back to this tomorrow, but that's all we have time for today. Thanks for that. Today's programme was produced by Annette Egan. Research was by Richie Byrne. On sound today was Mark McGrath. And our broadcast coordinator was Daniel Keating. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.